John Friend. All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. The website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I have appeared on as a guest. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also write for The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage all listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for more details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest today. Patrick Little is running for the U.S. Senate in California in the upcoming June 5th primary. Patrick is a former U.S. Marine who served in Afghanistan and is also an experienced IT engineer. Patrick, welcome to the program, sir. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm very well yourself.
Good, man. I'm doing just fine. Happy Saturday. It's nice and sunny down here in Southern California. If I am not mistaken, you are up in Northern California, correct?
Well, about halfway up, yeah. I'm in the East Bay, San Francisco Bay Area.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, I wanted to get started. I've heard all about your campaign. I've heard you interviewed on a number of programs and, you know, seen a number of YouTube videos, whether you're debating the guy. I just watched your debate with, I think he actually is a Jewish guy, on JF's YouTube channel. I thought that was a very interesting conversation. But just to get started, could you kind of talk about your background and your experience in the U.S. Marines, just to get started?
Sure. So I grew up in Maine. I graduated from the University of North Florida. I joined the Marines in April, into the delayed entry program in April 1st, 2011. I did boot camp and then went to MOS school in 29 Palms, California after doing a boot camp at Paris Island. And I was in 29 Palms, California. That's how I got out to the West Coast. Just enjoying the stumps out there, as we call them. And did OEF 2014 in Afghanistan, and came back, got out about a year later, and moved up to the Bay Area and did a lot of driving, and then got a job as a network engineer, and then woke up to the JQ, and now I'm doing this.
Very interesting. Okay, well, I wanted to actually just talk a little bit about your time in Afghanistan. What was your experience like? What were you doing over there?
Mostly stuff on a keyboard and with a mouse. I was a 0651 data network specialist. I maintained data networks, and I took care of like the VoIP phones and added and subtracted servers and switches and routers and basically expanded and contracted the network as we had needs to do. So I worked under the C5 there. I was part of, I worked under the C6 there. I was in the S6 of the logistical command element. And yeah, I mostly just did a lot of work on the computers, doing tickets 12 to 16 hours a day, IT work.
Gotcha. Did you have any like combat experience over there? Were you involved in you know, any fights or anything like that, I guess?
Only when, so we got rockets and mortars and stuff sent at the base a few times. But other than that, no, I did not actually get to shoot at anybody or anything like that.
Gotcha.
I was on base the whole time.
So, and then you got back, you got out of the Marines and you started working in IT. And this was, so basically you started working in the private sector, and that's when you kind of woke up, so to speak, to who was really in charge, who's really in charge in America. Is that kind of correct?
Well, yeah, I was a big Trump supporter, and some big Trump supporters said, hey, read this book, Culture of Critique, and you'll stop being a fan of Israel. I said, that's not true. They're our greatest ally. I'll disprove you, you anti-Semite. And read the Culture of Critique, and it put my world on its head. And a few months later, I said, somebody's got to take Feinstein out of power.
Yes, indeed. So that was really your big wake-up call, and I know I've heard you talk about this on other interviews, so we don't got to spend too much time on it, but that was kind of your main thing. You read Culture of Critique, and then that kind of opened the door to a number of other topics?
Yeah, well, a bunch of different topics about Jews. Yeah, there are all sorts of aspects of it, whether it's the communist aspect or their genocidal nature or their slaving nature. It brought up a whole bunch of very, very terrifying aspects of the Jewish people that cost me some sleep at first, and then eventually I overcame it, and now I just go out there and name the Jew long and hard, and it seems to be having great effect.
Yes, indeed, and I'm glad somebody's doing it. There are a couple other political candidates who are doing it as well, including Art Jones over in the suburbs of Chicago. I interviewed him on The Realist Report a few weeks ago, and he's really telling the truth in a big-time way, and I totally respect him and support what he's doing. And you're basically doing the same thing from what I can tell. I love it. I think it's finally time that somebody was out in the public space actually bringing these issues up and you know, running for office. And again, that's kind of exactly what you're doing. And that's interesting. I mean, my big wake-up call to the Jewish question was researching 9/11, and I know this is a topic you've kind of talked about as well. I'd never really questioned 9/11. I mean, I was a sophomore in high school when it happened, and I never really thought much about it. I was very much against the wars that we were fighting in the Middle East, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, certainly. I was learning about how, you know, we were like torturing people over there and, you know, killing a lot of innocent people, and the wars themselves were based on lies. Certainly the war in Iraq was based on lies. But I never really questioned 9/11 until I moved to California and I found a 9/11 truth group in San Diego where I lived for a number of years. And that really kind of rocked my world. It totally changed my worldview. I mean, I knew the government was corrupt and they were lying about a lot of things, but I didn't realize the extent of it until I started researching 9/11. And once I did, I quickly came to the realization that Israel and this, you know, international network of Jewish criminals operating in the United States, they were the ones that were really behind 9/11. You know, they formulated this whole narrative of a global war on terrorism. They kind of concocted this paradigm of foreign policy going all the way back to like the 1970s and 1980s. And they talked about how they needed a catalyzing event, something that could kind of kickstart and institutionalize this narrative, this paradigm of foreign policy, where America is basically fighting these wars in the Middle East on behalf of Israel, essentially, to advance Israel's geopolitical interests in the region, just, you know, using American military power. And that's really what we're doing over there. That's kind of what our whole foreign policy is at this point. So kind of researching 9/11 and coming to these conclusions led down a number of other paths, including Holocaust revisionism and just understanding the reality of Jewish supremacy in America, their control of the media, you know, their influence in our politics and our government, etc. So it's interesting the different paths that people take to come to these conclusions, you know what I mean?
All roads lead to the Jew, as they used to say about ancient Rome. It's yes. Multifaceted. The JQ is huge. I mean, there are a lot of people that get into flat earth and stuff like that after they find out about the JQ, because at that point they assume everything they've learned is false. And a lot of people, you know, God, it reminds me of this one time in college. There was a young lady, I think she had done some sort of narcotic or something in the dorms, and just, I saw her sitting on a couch, and she just screamed, "Nothing's real!" And that's kind of the reaction I've seen some of the people that had red-pilled after me have, and it's just game-changing, because this is why they make all of the crazy sounding conspiracy theories out there, so that if you start looking into the sort of stuff, you'll be like, no, that's just a conspiracy theory. It's incredible. I mean, the fact that the Holocaust is a complete fabrication, a projection of what the Jews did in the 20s and 30s. The fact that the only people arrested in 9/11 were Jews, Israelis. The fact that everything we've been told about the reasons we've gone to war is a complete bold-faced lie. It's just the rabbit hole goes deep. But sometimes I wonder if it's a rabbit hole at all, if it isn't more like an ant's nest, because you go down there and you get deep and it branches, and before you know it, Jews have been in charge of the slave trade globally since before Christ, by thousands of years. I mean, it's insane. Once you really start going down true history and just figure out that Jews are pretty much responsible for every bad thing you've ever heard about in history, it's just like, at that point, you're looking for things that groups have done that are bad that weren't Jews. And, you know, it's just like, it's a little treat when you find that. It's getting rarer and rarer as you become more and more woke. But it's, these are not good people.
Yeah, man, I totally hear you. And I know that kind of sounds very simplistic, you know, it's like the Jews behind everything that is bad that's going on. But it really is true. Yeah, I know.
99% of it. It's terrible.
I totally agree with you. I really do. And as you say, there are a number of different aspects of the Jewish problem or the Jewish question. I just say the Jewish problem, frankly, because that's really what it is. I have a kind of a question for you. How would you like just explain this in a nutshell to somebody? You know, because a lot of times you start talking about the Jews, you start talking about quote unquote conspiracies, and people have a hard time dealing with it. You know, they have these knee jerk reactions to these words, even to the word Jew, to the word conspiracy theory. You know, these are kind of weaponized terms. So I'm wondering, how would you just give someone a basic explanation of what's really going on and who's really responsible for it all?
Depends on the person. There's no one short answer I'll give to anyone on this. I completely adapt what I'm saying to the person, just because you're not dealing with somebody. You're not talking about some new cut of steak that you're trying to explain to people. Like, oh, have you tried this new way of doing steak? This isn't anything like that. This is billions and billions and billions of dollars have been poured into making Jews the eternal victim. I mean, every 2 hours they come up with a new damn Hollywood Holocaust movie about how terribly the Jews suffered in World War II, or some kid in a striped pajamas. I mean, even the sitcoms are just like, every fourth or fifth episode, someone's like, oh yeah, that's terrible, the Holocaust. It's all over the place. It's just pervasive. You're constantly reminded that the Holocaust is the worst thing ever, and you, white man, are responsible for it. And you're dealing with the most expensive indoctrination program in history, this Holocaust thing. You're not dealing with logic at this point. So when you're talking about Jews with people, you have to feel them out and figure out what they are for a person and figure out what they value most in life, and then how the Jews are destroying that. And that's where you go from. So if they're a conservative patriot, you start with the USS Liberty. You have the damn recording of the Israeli pilots confirming the attack to the airbase with you when you do it. You have the phone turned to a website with a Liberty survivor being like, yeah, it was the damn Jews. And you stand by and just repeat the same facts over and over again and insist that they're real until the person's willing to actually listen to what you're saying. Because before I woke up, someone started talking about anything negative about Jews to me. Knee jerk response. Just, nope, this is bad. Don't want to hear it. Eternal victim. And it's belief in the Holocaust is the most reinforced belief in Western man's history. There is no more reinforced belief ever. There's no more. It's the most reinforced piece of propaganda that has ever been used on anyone in, or any group in history. There's nothing like it. I've looked to history to try and find some sort of gaslighting like this, and I can't even find anything like it, let alone anything nearly this bad in terms of just the PSYOP, this massive, massive program of indoctrination.
Yes.
It's incredible. And that's what you're dealing with. You're not dealing with a factual debate. You're dealing with, oh my God, I'm saying that I'm a witch and that I like to eat dead babies, that I like to eat babies, all in one, just screaming it all in one sentence. You know, it's, you have to figure out what the person values most in life and then explain how Jews are destroying it.
Yeah. No, that's a good answer. I think that is because everybody is different. Everybody comes at it from different angles, and there's a number of as we've discussed, there's so many aspects of the Jewish problem. You know, there's a number of angles that you could pursue when you're talking to people. I think generally speaking, though, the main points that I always try to make is just, I mean, truly the reality of Jewish power and Jewish supremacy in America. And, you know, I've been following the, like, explicitly Jewish press, news outlets like the Jewish Daily Forward, the Times of Israel, the Jewish Telegraph Agency, you know, websites and news outlets like that that are written by Jews, for a Jewish audience. And, you know, if you follow these websites and these news outlets, you can find multiple examples, like, every single day demonstrating all of the basic points that we're making, where you'll have articles where Jews are boasting and bragging about how they control the media, for example, or about how powerful and influential AIPAC is, or any other topic. So that's kind of what how I always try to approach it with people, is use Jewish sources to demonstrate the points that I'm trying to make. That to me is the main thing, because we can really prove all this. It's not some, you know, crazy conspiracy theory or some conjecture, some idea that we have, some theory. It's facts. We can prove it. And we have multiple examples of Jews themselves openly admitting these things and reporting on them and discussing them honestly and frankly, you know, amongst their peers, amongst other Jews. So that's really kind of the way I try to pursue it. You know, it's not always successful. You know, as you said, a lot of people have these very knee-jerk reactions. They've been programmed. All of the anti-white, pro-Jewish propaganda is very powerful, very effective. And a lot of it does center around World War II. I completely agree with you. So here's another very direct question, because if you're talking about these issues as a political candidate or just as somebody using their real name, you know, there's a lot of heat put on you, a lot of pressure put on you, you know. You're called a Nazi and a conspiracy theorist and an anti-Semite and a Holocaust denier, right? How do you deal with the Holocaust? If a journalist were to approach you, and I'm sure that they have, what would you say about the Holocaust?
Have you seen any of my stuff where this comes up?
I probably have. I'd like to just have you address it here on the program, though, as well.
Sure. A lot of the time I just laugh at them. I was in a debate with Halsey, and he claimed that the population of Jews was reduced from 12 million to 6 million during World War II. And I just started laughing. I laughed long and I laughed hard because it's hilarious. The main response is just to ask them, what do they mean? What is this buzzword? It's like when someone calls you racist or a white supremacist or whatever they want to call you. Ask them what they mean. Define the term. And white people that have been indoctrinated come straight out and say, World War II, 6 million Jews were murdered by Germans, mostly in gas chambers or something like that, right? However, if you ask a Jew what the Holocaust was, if they call you a Holocaust denier, they'll come up with something where they have this wormy, well, you know, pretty much the people that died during World War II and the Jews really suffered. Because at that point, if you ask someone to define the Holocaust, they know that you know. And they'll try and just worm their way out of giving you a direct answer that's disprovable. I was on with NBC News once, and they said, "Are you a Holocaust denier?" And I said, "Define the Holocaust." And they kept on trying to dodge the question. And ultimately, it took 20 minutes of me trying to get them to say 6 million Jews were killed between 1939 and 1945, and they wouldn't do it. One of the cameramen said it, and the female reporter, who I knew was part Jewish, looked at him and was like, "Shh, don't say it, don't say it, he can disprove it." And just after 20 minutes of that, you can listen to the tape, it's on my website, of I recorded it, me talking to the press. And they couldn't get me to say straight out, they said, "Patrick Little, do you deny the Holocaust?" And they just wanted the sound bit right to say yes or you're damn right or something like that. And I just kept on screwing up the sound bit they were trying to get, and I eventually just gave up. And just ask them, what do you mean? What is the Holocaust? And then start talking about the 30 million or 25 million white Christians that the Jews killed intentionally in the largest genocide in history at the time in the Jewish-controlled Soviet Union.
Right. Do you think, Holocaust revisionism is an important topic for, for the alt-right or for, the broader pro-white movement? Do you think it's an issue that we need to be addressing straightforwardly and frankly and honestly, or is it something that we can kind of avoid?
You just said "and frankly."
Well, do you know what I mean? Is it something that is important to our struggle is what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, there are some people that woke up to the JQ when they realized, hold on, this Holocaust thing just doesn't add up. I believe it was Monica Schaefer who looked into the Holocaust thing and was just like, "What? This is a complete bold-faced fucking lie." I actually know a guy from a little bit inland of here. The Holocaust was his red pill. Like, the moment somebody said that the Holocaust thing didn't quite add up, and he's like, "No, that can't be true." He looked into it, and he went from that to just full-blown, knowing and knowing with some emotion. in just a short time. So that one guy, just knowing that the Holocaust was a lie, automatically woke him up to the rest. It's like he already knew the rest of it, just he wouldn't let himself admit it. And then the Holocaust, when he figured out the Holocaust was just a myth, he became fully awake. So yeah, it's one of, I don't shy from it. A lot of people shy from it or say change the subject or something. I'd go on the attack. When someone says Holocaust to me, I become very, very angry because I just think of the psychological abuse they did to me as a child, showing me naked pictures of dead piles of people and saying, using that as proof to make me think I'm a monster because I'm white.
Yes.
I get angry. If someone brings up the Holocaust to me, I go on the offensive.
Well, good. I think that is the correct approach to it. I mean, I don't think it's an issue that can be avoided because, again, as soon as you start talking about any of these issues, Jewish power, you take a pro-white stance, you're almost immediately tied into Hitler and the Nazis and white supremacy and all these other buzzwords. So yep. To me, it's not something that really can be avoided. And not only that, it's the fake Holocaust narrative and the overall narrative of World War II more generally, which presents, Hitler and the Nazis as like these evil maniacs that wanted to kill all the Jews and take over the world and, all the other nonsense propaganda that goes with it. It really is like the foundation of our historical paradigm, that the way people understand our history, the way people understand our world, it shapes everything. So it's like a foundational narrative of how people view the world, and it's fundamentally flawed. It's a weaponized narrative advanced and perpetuated by Jews to attack our race. So I don't see how, we could ever avoid this or, try to step over it or something when it really is the primary weapon being used to exploit us and to advance all these anti-white policies.
Well, the key thing is not to get squirmy about it. So a lot of people, when they bring up, when Jews will try and beat you over the head with the Holocaust, will try and change the subject or just, give a weak passive quote-unquote denial of it. But no, keep it. Agree and amplify. Well, if they bring it up and just start talking about the monstrous nature of Jews and all the genocides they've committed and how the Holocaust is a projection, make them sorry they brought up the big, they dropped the H-bomb. You got to make them regret it. Ultimately, if a bunch of people see people like us just, you know, pretty much yelling at Jews for accusing us of a Holocaust, that's the direction we need to go in. Because people need to be curious. Why is he responding this way to the greatest sin of all history, you know?
Sure, yeah. And, you know, another thing, too, this is a topic that I've written about and talked about pretty extensively. And I've read a number of books dealing with the Holocaust from a revisionist perspective. And really, I think we can conclusively demonstrate that the official narrative is 100% flawed. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. We can prove it. It's not true. And we can also prove that it was actually, as you've been bringing up, it was the Jews who were responsible for the true genocides during this, this historical era. We have quotes from Jews openly saying how they wanted to genocide the German people and destroy the German nation. That was the whole goal of
I'll do you one better. They openly say they want to genocide whites now. Look at that Jewish supremacist bastard Noel Ignatieff at Harvard. Jews openly admit that they want to completely annihilate whites. They go to white countries and they openly say, yeah, this is the end of you. Your people's over. You're done. You're the past. The future is this future child here that, whatever makes you like. It's literally, it's just like the Palestinians. They just say, Palestine's fake. It never existed. You know, it's just like, and there's a Palestinian, they're like, I holding their hand, I'm Mr. Jew, I'm real. They're just like, shut up! I'll run you over with a bulldozer. You're a societal construct. You don't actually exist. It's just this, the pathological the psychopathic levels of audacity of these Jews. They speak about us as if we don't already exist. There's no such thing as white. You don't exist, Goy. There's no such thing as Palestine. You don't exist, Goy. And that's when you realize you're dealing with what in times gone past would have only been described as demons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, go ahead.
The mind of the Jew is pure evil. And I do not think there are many exceptions to that. I mean, to be able to do the stuff that they do and say the things that they say and keep a straight face or appear sincere, that they're, I mean, this is Charlie Manson type shit. Where you can do these terrible things and say these horrible genocidal things about other groups and keep a straight face and act like you're being righteous while you're saying it. This is what serial killers and stuff can do. This is the type of psychological disconnect or faulty wiring in the head that only the sickest of puppies in non-Jewish peoples are capable of doing. And it's their average capacity for behavior.
Yes. Patrick, I wanted to talk about how you got involved in politics and your decision to run for Senate. Could you kind of walk us through how that all went down?
I couldn't think of a better way to remove these bastards from power than to get up there and run and challenge people like Feinstein. And, some people say pick your battles, pick your targets and stuff. I see myself as an 88-millimeter flak cannon and her as a slow-moving hydrogen blimp flying low. Like, it doesn't get any easier than this. I mean, show me an easier target than this in terms of waking people up. She's a dual citizen. She's been in the Senate forever. Her primary residence is in Israel. She's just... Show me an easier target. I mean, she's constantly saying we need to take white people's guns away, in other words, in the Senate. And voted for the Iraq War, always voting to send more money to a real country, Israel. I couldn't think of a better way to wake people up than to run. I've spent I think less than 5,000 at this point. And I've caused so much kvetching and screaming of Jews that, you know, this is the best, you know, 5,000 bucks I've ever spent.
Yeah. No, you definitely have. I mean, gosh, just since you've, you know, really got involved in the campaign, you know, there have been a number of news articles written about you. You've been interviewed a number of times by, you know, a lot of mainstream outlets. I actually just wrote a blog post covering the ADL. The ADL was denouncing your quote-unquote anti-Semitic robocalls that were put out. And you can listen to the robocall on YouTube. There's a YouTube video of it. It's very, very good. I got a good laugh out of hearing that. I didn't myself receive a robocall. I was kind of disappointed about that, but I'm glad that you're, you know, doing something like that, because it really does just kind of expose exactly what's going on. And I'm looking at your platform, your campaign slogan, "Liberate the U.S. from the Jewish oligarchy." While I'm looking to represent all U.S. citizens in California, I am a white advocate. There is systematic discrimination and incitement against European-descended Americans, and I want to crush manifestations of anti-white racism in U.S. institutions. Brilliantly stated, very concise. That's what you're all about, and we need somebody up there saying these things and doing these things, so I totally salute you.
Thank you. I mean, 55% of white Americans were willing to admit on a telephone survey that they feel systematically discriminated against, which means the real number is probably closer to 80%. But I think it's 100% if the people just, you know, if you talk about people that refuse to admit it themselves, but no, on some level. And I mean, you have to be high on drugs to think that isn't the case. And whether or not people admit it or not is another thing, but there's a campaign to destroy all white peoples and all white countries, and the Jews are behind it, and I can prove it. And I want to try and challenge this machine of anti-white hatred that they've built up and let people know that it's really the Jews that are behind almost everything they accuse us of, and liberate all peoples from Jewish supremacist control and stop the genocides, whether they be in Palestine, whether it's the Assyrians, whether it's the ethnic and religious minorities of the Middle East that the Jews have used proxy forces to target, such as the Assyrians in the Middle East. Somebody's got to stop these genocidal bastards. And the first step in a genocide is dehumanizing of the opponent. And they have dehumanized whites to such an extent that people feel comfortable openly attacking us. And for the most case, it's open season on whites in this country. I mean, the young African Americans in Chicago that had been gaslit by the Jews into hating whites to the point where they picked a random white guy off the street and scalped him on Facebook Live. I mean, I think they only faced community service, not even jail time. And, you know, the system is set up to incite everyone against us and then not punish them if they do something against us. It's terrible. And more people need to stand up and do something about it.
Yes, yes, I agree. I wanted to talk a little bit about your platform. Before we do that, could you kind of tell us, like, how you've been running and managing your campaign? It kind of sounds like it's kind of a one-man operation, so you're probably doing a lot of work yourself. But could you kind of talk about your campaign, if anybody's involved with it, how people can help your campaign, and how you've been trying to get your message out there?
Sure. If you'd like to help the campaign, you can do so by volunteering. And that's littlerevolution.us. That's .us, not .com. littlerevolution.us/... I think volunteer. Oh crap. let me try that.
I'm on your site right now. You have a blog, you have media, you have your platform, which I want to talk about here in just a minute. You can contribute to your campaign.
Yeah, it's /volunteer after the US. And if you'd like to help financially, it's littlerevolution.us/donate.
And you can also send an email to onboarding@littlerevolution.us, onboarding@littlerevolution.us, and say you want to volunteer for the campaign if you're a U.S. citizen, and you can volunteer that way.
Very cool. Yeah, and I'm going to have your social media profiles linked as well, in addition to your website, when I post this program. I know you were censored on Twitter. I see your back there as @censoredcandid8 with the 8, and I'll link that. So you are back on Twitter. That is your profile, correct?
Yeah, I've got a few of them that are floating around, but they keep on asking me to delete tweets, and every time they ask me to delete tweets, I just open up a new account because I will not self-censor. So I've been locked out of 6 or 7 Twitter accounts, some of which the Jews just outright deleted. But yeah, I've got 2 or 3 Twitter accounts right now that appear to be running that are really just the Jews said you have to delete something to be able to use your account again. And I won't delete it. If it's the truth, I won't delete it. I even made one Twitter account, and I made the statement in one tweet, you know, my last account was locked because of this tweet. And then I showed the screenshot, and I won't delete it because it's the truth. And then they locked my account, my new account for that. So I will not self-censor. I won't do it with a keyboard. I won't do it with my mouth. When the Jews get you to self-censor, they have 90% less work in trying to be tyrants over us.
Yes, no, I know there have been a lot of people that have been censored on Twitter and many other, YouTube, for example, PayPal. I mean, I've been totally banned from PayPal as an individual.
Most people will self-censor now because they don't want to get kicked off YouTube. They don't want to get kicked off this platform. Do not self-censor. That is the worst thing you can do.
Well, how have you been, you know, getting your message out? I know you have a lot of people that are kind of supporting you online, on Gab, on Twitter, on YouTube. But do you have like an actual campaign organization, or are you pretty much a one-man show?
There are lots of Anon volunteers helping. It's funny. I have so much, the level and intensity and just enthusiasm I have for my supporters versus their, you know, unwillingness to do stuff IRL or to attach the real name. It's such a huge disconnect. Because you look at the volunteers for other candidates, and unless it's like someone like Trump in 2016, it's just like, oh, I'm doing this to get experience in politics. I'm volunteering so I can figure out how to go to politics. You know, versus like this campaign, you wouldn't believe some of the emails I've gotten where like people are like, your campaign has given me hope again. I was getting ready. You know, people, a lot of people, even whites with kids, are like getting ready to give like the Goebbels treatment to their children and stuff, just like, you know, we're going to be raped and tortured to death. I'm thinking about here, let me mix the cyanide into the Kool-Aid and make sure the kids drink plenty. Like, there are people who just think that this genocide's going to proceed, that we're going to just, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. They say, you know, I'm just going to try and enjoy it as much as I can before we get to South African levels of white suffering. And people are going batshit crazy loving this campaign, but for the love of God, they most of them will not associate the real name or even admit that they're supporting me. And it's such a huge disconnect. That's when you really know how bad Jewish terrorism is in this country, because there's no way you can have that type of disconnect between what you really want and really advocate and what you're actually willing to say in public. The disconnect is huge. But yeah, I have a large force of volunteers that are mostly Anons, mostly people that have good, really good jobs that, you know, work full time. It's a shame that the retired boomers and stuff that have all day off won't volunteer for me. But then again, the Holocaust.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's a lot of people that do this stuff anonymously on the internet. I've always, since I started doing this, I've always used my real name. And I don't know, I just, I don't think we're ever going to really get anywhere if we're just doing things anonymously on the internet. You know what I mean? And I know that there are a lot of very real risks, you know, involved with, you know, coming out and saying these things publicly using your real name. I've been fired from a couple different jobs since I've been doing this. But at the same time, you know, when we're in a fight like this, in a struggle like this, if we really want to make any progress and get anywhere, we got to kind of man up and get out there and say these things and do these things. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. Ultimately, the next big step that we're going to have to take is getting people to stop hiding. They would dox all of us if there weren't too many of us. And we know from all the different intel leaks that they know pretty much everything that's ever happened that's kind of crossed an electric wire, you know, in terms of anything digital that's ever happened, pretty much the Jews have record of. So if they wanted us to be doxxed in mass, they would do it. So yeah. It's the whole who's going to charge the enemy first. You know, that thing. Who's gonna be the first one to take the leap of faith and help everyone else follows? And you have to name the Jew. You have to do it with your real name, and you have to do it soon. I don't know if you need to make sure all of your shit is secured and ready to go for when you do it, but I mean, ultimately, that's what needs to happen. With no fear, do not fear death. Do not fear prison. These Jews are cowards. They wouldn't use the type of terrorism that they use if they weren't cowards. These Jews cannot fight. I've had one attack me. I slammed his ass into a fucking hot dog cart. They will shy away. They'll talk big, but you defend yourself and they fucking run like cowards.
Wow. I did not know that. Well, let's kind of... I told you I'd keep you here about an hour, and I know this is going to take some time to kind of go over your platform and go over some of the issues that are important to you and your campaign. I read your campaign slogan. It's all about ending Jewish supremacy in America, exposing the Jewish oligarchy running America, exposing the attack on the white race in America and how whites are discriminated against. And, you know, there's this very real anti-white agenda going on in America, and it's led, again, primarily by the organized Jewish community and by the Jewish media. So that's kind of what your campaign is all about. I'm looking at your platform here on your website, and I think what I'd like to do is maybe just read two or three bullets at a time and then have you respond and kind of elaborate a little bit on them.
Go ahead.
So the first one here, merit-based employment in all government agencies and all institutions which receive funds from the federal and state governments. Number two, limiting representation of Jews in the government to include judgeships to number proportional to their percentage of the U.S. population. And then three, introduce legislation outlawing lobbying efforts of foreign governments, specifically those of the terrorist state of Israel. Do you want to comment just on these first three quick?
Yeah, I'm going to put a naval blockade on the terrorist state of Israel until they give us back our nuclear weapons.
Yes. Well, and I the third one in particular, I mean, my gosh, we have literally, you know, a foreign government openly interfering and manipulating our government through AIPAC and through a number of other Jewish lobbying organizations.
John,
yes.
But John, Holocaust.
Yes, I know, right? That's what, of course, they'll bring up. No, but I mean, I think that's totally spot on. I mean, we have to address this. And, you know, again, Jews will openly admit how much power and influence they have over the government. They'll talk about how powerful AIPAC is. And then when you or I are critical of it, they'll turn around and call us conspiracy theorists and denounce us as, you know, anti-Semites for bringing this stuff up. Uh-huh. But it's totally sensible. I mean, we got to outlaw these people from manipulating our government, controlling our government.
You know, if you just would have stopped that last sentence at people, I would have agreed.
Yeah. Well, your next bullet here is introducing Senate resolution condemning Israel for terrorist attacks on the USS Liberty and US bases during the Levon affair. And these were issues that I learned about really by researching 9/11. I discovered that the State of Israel and international Jewry have a long history of carrying out false flag terrorist attacks, not only against the U.S., but against many other countries and many other nations. It's basically their MO. This is how they operate. They carry out false flag terrorist attacks to get the U.S. involved in a war or to demonize an enemy. And they've attacked us on multiple occasions. You cite two of them here, the USS Liberty and then the Levant affair. I think we could also bring up 9/11. Yeah. You know, that was probably the mother of all false flag terrorist attacks.
No, I agree. I won't get there, though. I don't want to boil the frog.
Now, your next bullet here, this one's really interesting. Put to rest the issue of slavery in the U.S. by introducing a bill ending all foreign aid to Israel and giving the U.S. population of blacks descended of African slaves in the U.S. a one-time payment. This payment will be equivalent to the next 10 years of aid to Israel divided by the number of recipients. Enshrined in this bill will be a permanent ban on providing foreign aid to Israel, including a death penalty for any politician introducing a bill that would lead to foreign aid to Israel. Very, very interesting campaign proposal here.
Yeah, that one's designed for people to look at it and figure out that A, Jews dominated the slave trade, B, Israel is a terrorist state, and C, you should not even be allowed to advocate for helping this terrorist state. I mean, yeah, and I got to tell you, the African-American community really is, they are interested in ending aid to Israel. And that's, you know, we need to be civil rights advocates and get people to really talk about helping end the genocide in Palestine. And, you know, it's symbolic putting that all into one act here, into one bill. And I think I can get that bill through Congress. I just need a whip and a bullhorn.
Now, I'm curious. I mean, you openly describe yourself as a white advocate. What has been the response of, you know, non-whites, I guess? Because there are certainly a lot of non-whites in California.
Non-whites do not respect self-hating whites. I mean, if you're walking around with that, whatever identity you were allowed to borrow from some Jew Hollywood movie instead of just being a white traditional man, nobody respects you, especially the Asians. Like, if you're one of these white cucks that's just going around, you know, pretending that you're whatever cookie cutter identity that Jews sell whites in lieu of their actual one, these other races laugh at you. I mean, you talk to anyone. I haven't been to prison, but talk to a white guy who has. Like, if you're a cuck, you know, no one's gonna fucking respect you. And ultimately, you know, pretending not to be white or LARPing as you know, with the traditions and sayings and language of another race, or, you know, not being anything other than a traditional white man, a non-white will not respect you. And that's pretty much true across the board. You might find some exceptions, but I mean, nobody likes a self-hating pussy.
Yeah. What, I mean, how have people responded though? Or have you had much interaction with like the Hispanic community or black community? Are people kind of recognizing what you're about?
The only people that have attacked me are Jews.
Yes, that does not surprise me. Well, and really, I think we have, I mean, I would totally describe myself as a white advocate as well, but that doesn't mean
I'm a civil rights advocate.
I hate other, you know, non-whites or something like that. You know what I mean? I think, the way things should be framed is that, look, we're all under attack by Jewish supremacy, right? I mean, primarily whites, I would argue. But everybody's, you know, under assault by these people. Look at all the degeneracy they push. You know, everybody's being exposed to this stuff. It's really a war on humanity, in my opinion.
No. Yeah, they're trying to destroy everything good and beautiful. And it's easy. It's much easier to red pill non-whites than it is to red pill whites. When I talk to a non-white, I focus even more on the JQ than if I were talking to a white person. Even more.
Yeah, and again, as you say, they're probably much more receptive or willing to entertain mm-hmm. what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they don't think that they are vicariously responsible for pulling the gas the Jews lever 6 million times. You know, they don't have the same level of brainwashing that we have.
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on here. This next bullet, this is the first time I've encountered this. This is very interesting. Introduce a bill to fund research into implementing my Mars impact theory, the redirection of asteroids to a collision path with Mars, such that the planet would have its magnetosphere and atmosphere restored for later colonization and mineral exploitation by the U.S. government, and potentially any partners in colonization. So you want to colonize Mars? Is that what this is about?
Yeah, I mean, look at the history of man. You go out and you populate new lands. Read that. I got an award from the physics department at the University of North Florida. I came up with that idea. And I had never taken a physics class in college. I got an award from a physics department for that idea. I was in an astronomy class. And I was watching some stuff on my own at home. And I saw one theory about how the moon was formed. And I took some of the ideas from that theory and said, well, what part of that theory had been an asteroid hitting the Earth and knocking off some of the mantle to form material in a ring around the planet that consolidated into a planet. Anyhow, I said, what if we intentionally hit Mars with an asteroid that would heat up the core, the molten metals on the inside, to the point where there would be sufficient magnetic induction to restore the magnetosphere, which acts to deflect most of the radiation from this Earth. Mars used to have one. That's very weak now. There isn't enough stirring of the pot, so to say, in the center of that planet. The core is cooled down too much for the magnetic induction to really be in force. You can read that. It's on my website. I came up with this, and I put that on there just to show that, you know, just naming the Jew isn't my real passion. Like, if these monsters didn't exist, like, this is the type of stuff that I would be saying we need to do with our time in government. Like, if we were just a country that wasn't run by Jews, or where our families hadn't been destroyed by Jewish poison, where our kids weren't getting addicted to these Jewish narcotics, we could focus on stuff like this, and it would be really cool. And it's just, you can either have space travel or you can have Jews. Pick one.
Right, yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, no, I have not read the link that's in this. And guys, if you check out the platform, you'll see what I'm talking about when you read this bullet point. I will do so after the show. I think it's very interesting. I know nothing about it. I haven't really ever heard of it before. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
I wrote it in layman's.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's move on here. These next two bullets, they kind of relate to some of the previous ones. So you got here, introduction of a bill to the Senate proposing the immediate dismissal of the necessary number of Jewish jurists that would reduce their representation in federal courts and the Supreme Court to a number representative of their percentage of the U.S. population. And you bring up the Supreme Court here. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think like 3 or 4 U.S. Supreme Court justices are Jewish, you know, are Jewish individuals, which is way out of proportion to their, you know, to their percentage of the population. That kind of goes back to, yeah, some of the other, to one or two of the other previous bullets, you know. Jews are just so overrepresented in our government and in many institutions of power, and pretty much all of the major positions of power in our government and in our media and in our society more generally. In our banking, for example, corporate world, etc. It's incredible how much power and influence that they have.
Yeah, no, that's self-evident. I mean, we need to remove Jews from power, and we need to do it now. And yes, that is for you to run for office in 2020 and do exactly what I'm doing. I think Fitzgerald's here in California saw what I was doing, and he's been naming the Jew almost as hard as I have recently. So get out there and name the Jew. Your future, the freedom of your children depends on it. I mean, You got to get out there and slay the beast.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Well, there's just a few more here. I'll read through quickly and we can kind of comment on them. Your next bullet is introduction of a bill that would lead to the embargoing of Israel until they agreed to repay all foreign aid previously rendered, as well as reparations to families of the victims of Jewish terrorist attacks on the U.S. Introduce a bill in the U.S. Senate making it illegal to raise funds for any foundation related to the perpetuating of propaganda related to a Holocaust, formally making U.S.'s stance on the Holocaust to be that it is a Jewish war atrocity propaganda hoax that never happened. There we go. Let's codify this in law, our stance on the Holocaust. I love it.
Yeah, it has to be done.
Yeah. No, I think that's a powerful one. That's good. Your next bullet here is introduce legislation restoring immigration policy in the U.S. such that the 1965 Immigration Act is repealed and restoring the policies of the National Origins Act. And at the beginning of our conversation, you talked about Dr. Kevin MacDonald's book, The Culture of Critique. That chapter in Culture of Critique dealing with how America's borders were opened and how we were transformed from this essentially like a white nationalist country. We had an immigration policy that kept our, you know, our racial integrity and, you know, basically it was a white country to this open borders, multicultural nonsense. All of this was a result of Jewish propaganda, Jewish lobbying, you know, the organized Jewish community basically advancing this narrative, advancing this agenda, and they got it all institutionalized with this 1965 Immigration Act. That's really what kind of opened the floodgates of America. So this is good. I mean, I think addressing this issue head on and repealing it, essentially, that's exactly what we need to do. And it needs to be explained how this all happened and why we're doing this, right? Because this was an act of war on traditional America, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we're coming, it's a little bit past 10, and how much time was I supposed to allocate on the schedule? Because I have till 10, I've got a very busy day today.
No, that's no problem. I mean, there's just a couple more bullets here. And you know what, I'll have a link over to your platform so people can read them, you know, read your platform for themselves. I think a lot of it makes a lot of sense. It's very well stated. It's very straightforward and really addressing these issues head on. And I totally support you. I think you're doing a good job. I think you're taking a very bold and brave stance. And I wish you the best of luck on Tuesday. I will certainly be voting for you, as will my fiance and anybody else that I can convince to go down to the polls. I'm gonna have them go vote for you. So I wish you luck, man. What do you think your chances are?
Gonna come in first.
Yes. And if you come in, and real quick, we can kind of wrap up with that. If you do come in second, you'll be officially on the ballot in the main election in November. Is that correct? Is that kind of the way it works?
That's correct. Just think of every vote for me as another Jew that's going to have to kvetch. So get out there and vote. And thank you for having me on, sir. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And let's do it again sometime.
All right. Sounds good, Patrick. Thank you very much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Welcome. Have a great day, sir. Bye.